welcome to another episode of the Emma Gunn Show. I am your host, Emma Gunn Wardner. Thank you for joining me. I'm really pleased to be bringing you this week's guest. It is Lindsay Kelk. She makes me smile, even just saying her name, even thinking her name makes me smile. She's one of those people. She's an author, fellow podcaster, cat lover, wrestling fanatic, who also happens to have excellent taste in music. And her I Heart series, the books that she writes, are that coveted thing that I would imagine many, if not all authors, want their books to be, that word that doesn't exist, unputdownable. In fact, I'm currently sitting on my hands constantly trying not to abuse the author-reader relationship because I'm reading one of her books at the moment and I want to get in touch and say, but is it going to be okay? What happens? Because I think that his intentions are a bit off and I'm not so happy about this. And you can't do that to an author. It's not fair. You have to read the book. So, it's very tricky sometimes not to just tweet her and say something. But I have. I've only done it once and she was cool about it, but I'm not going to do it again. I'm going to show restraint. Anyway, in addition to having written 13 books, she and makeup artist Harriet are the host of the beauty podcast Full Coverage, which dispenses with the crisp cellophane and pretty packaging of unwrapping a new beauty product, such as Rihanna's Fenty Beauty, for example, to give a recent instance. And they give you the lowdown on what the makeup inside is really like. And they give it from Harriet's perspective, as a working makeup artist who knows what looks good, what works with certain skin types, what works well under the camera, what will last, all of those things that is just genius insight. Plus, you've got Lindsay's perspective as a real beauty fan who also knows her stuff too, but has a slightly different perspective looking at it. It's a really interesting listen. If you like watching those videos on YouTube where people unwrap and open beauty products, or if you just like to hear about what something is like first, then definitely give it a listen. Lindsay lives in LA, but she was in town, and by town I mean London, recently, to promote the latest book in the I Heart series, which is I Heart Forever. So I stole her for a couple of hours to record this episode of the show. And we did what all good podcasters do. We cross-podinated. I'm going to trademark that. So you'll be able to hear me quacking on a future episode of Full Coverage. So if you want to hear what it's like when I'm answering, not asking the questions, then maybe pop into your feed and subscribe to Full Coverage so you get the alert when that one comes out. We hold ourselves away in the new Bobby Brown Pro store to record, and it was just a brilliant day. And I was just trying to think, how did I meet Lindsay? Well, we've been chatting on Twitter for a while, and we have quite a few mutual friends. And somehow, not too long ago, I appointed her as my life coach, and it's been going very well, thank you very much. But to actually have proper FaceTime with Lindsay, it was a real pleasure. And I'm smiling again, she's just one of those people. On this episode, we talk about beauty geekery, how she went from living in Doncaster to living in LA down the road from where Ryan Gosling gets his breakfast, how she goes about writing her books, she has so many, I really, really wanted to know, and so much more. But also this week, I went to a very exciting beauty launch. Dr. Dennis Gross invited me to try the new Spectralite, but it's Dr. X, I think. I don't know if you're supposed to say that, because that makes it sound like an X-Man, which obviously means I'm already sold. But Spectralite Eye Care Pro is essentially an eye mask, but it's more rigid. It's not a disposable. It's a gadget. It's not disposable. So essentially, you wear it. It looks a bit like... I urge you to go to my Instagram, at Emma Gunns, and you'll see me wearing it. It is like 3D glasses, but it doesn't have... It's a little bit like a superhero mask, is the only way I can really describe it in audio. But it uses a full spectrum of light, so it uses amber, red, deep red and infrared wavelengths. And you wear it for a few minutes every day, and what it does is these wavelengths stimulate the natural production of collagen to reduce fine lines and wrinkles. So the eyes generally tend to be the first area on the face that begin to show the signs of aging, because the skin around the eyes is slightly thinner, and also it's where we do most of our expressing. Our eyes move, therefore the skin tends to gets into the habit of falling into these particular creases. So actually, you know, I use eye cream, I'm sure many of you do use eye cream too, but it's actually really interesting to see a device come out that it's actually designed to work on what's actually going on in the skin rather than putting something else into the mix. So I'm going to be using that and to give you some feedback on what I think of it. But again, I urge you to go over to my Instagram to see what it looks like. And it's the kind of thing that it gives you permission. You put it on and it gives you permission to sit down quietly for 5 minutes. You can walk around with it on if you so wish, but actually why not just put your feet up and go, right, I'm doing my Dr. Dennis Grove Spectralite, so I'm just gonna sit down for 5 minutes, have a little think about my day, my eyes are gonna look better for it at the end. So there's that. Then, in addition, this week, I've become feral in my pursuit of all things Misoma. So Misoma's a jewelry brand, and I watch Sam Chapman's Instagram lives, and one of the questions she gets asked a lot, in addition to makeup obviously, is about her necklaces. And she's got this very cute necklace, and I was like, oh, I might go and take a look at that, because I think she mentioned that it was from Misoma. And then I discovered their earrings, and having recently had 3 new ear piercings, having had my traditional 2 for over 30 years, no, that's a lie, maybe 30 years, anyway, I decided I needed some hoops and I needed some stuff going on, and I've not been able to find anything, unless it actually will break my bank, which is a horrible idea, just for earrings. But Misoma do really nice, pretty studs, and they've got these incredible hoops with turquoise drops and pave diamond drops, and they are far more reasonable for your wallet than some of the other brands that are doing jolly well, thank you very much, with all the piercing trends. So I have spent a lot of time on that website. If you like jewellery, and if you have a particular want for hooped earrings especially, I love the ones that have the turquoise drops. If you just like fine jewellery that's not too, I'm not doing it justice, am I? Go and have a look, misoma.com, I'll put the link in my show notes. It's just one of those things, you know, when you just discover a brand and you're like, oh, I might possibly need everything. I've just had one of those moments, and I want to share the love, because I feel like it's the kind of thing when I got my ears pierced, and I was saying, oh, I just can't find nice earrings that won't break the bank, and everyone was saying the same. And so I'm just telling the world, because I feel like, oh, I think I found it. So I found it via necklaces, but hey, there you go. These earrings are rather fantastic. So that's what's been happening this week. But right now, I think we should get into my chat with Lindsay, because I'm smiling again. It just makes me very happy. She's very cool. She's great fun. I learned a lot from her. She's an author, so I asked her about her creative process, because I know many of you have enjoyed that question in the past. So I hope that you find this useful. Thank you for listening. If you want to get in touch with the show, please, it's very, very simple. You just have to go to my website, emmaguns.com. You click the envelope, that email comes straight into my inbox. You can also follow me on Instagram and Twitter, which is where I tend to be most active. I do put stuff on Facebook, but not so much. I'm at Emma Guns on both of those, and if you DM me on either of those, I do tend to get back to you. If you comment on any of my pictures and ask me a question, I do my level best to get back to you. Thank you to everyone who's been emailing recently. I have seen your messages. I'm sorry I haven't got to them as quickly as I would like, but trust me, I will. And apologies if there has been any kind of delay. Right, so here we go. Here it is. Lindsay Kelk, the epic Lindsay Kelk, on The Emma Gunn Show. I am face to face with my designated life coach, Lindsay Kelk.
Hello, I'm very excited about this.
I'm super excited because not only are you my life coach, we are fellow podcasters.
Yes, which is very important, I think, for a life coach.
Very important for a life coach, but also just good to be face to face with the podcast fam.
Yes, because we're few and far between and we're far flung. That's a lot of F's.
That was a lot of F's. Yeah. Thank goodness you didn't fluff it up. You are over in London at the moment because you're promoting your other project.
Yes.
I tried to use some American
language. Yeah, I'm promoting my project. It's my most recent project.
Which is your book, I Heart Forever.
Yes.
So you've been, what's the last week? How long have you been here now?
I've been here for 2.5 weeks. I've been on tour. I know, it's super exciting. I feel like a rock star.
Which do you have screaming fans outside your hotel?
No, it's the least rock and roll thing.
Would you like me to organise
something? If you could, okay. That would actually be great. I'd feel really good about myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, book tour is like, I think it might be the least rock and roll tour of all of the tours. But it's been really fun. It's just been crazy though.
This isn't your first book.
It is not my first book, it's my 13th book.
Crivens!
Yes.
Are you superstitious? Did you start writing 14 in tandem?
I didn't, but I did. This is the first time I've ever switched projects halfway through, because I started writing something else and it just would not come out. And I ended up switching it and doing this book instead, because I knew I wanted to do this. I was supposed to do this after. So yeah, 13 was, it was sneaky.
Interesting. So tell me about the books.
Yeah, so the I Heart series, which is what I'm predominantly known for, I would say, and is what this book is a part of. It's part of the I Heart series. They are a series of rom-coms, heavy on the com, steady on the rom, about an English girl called Angela, who moves to New York after finding out her fiancé is cheating on her at her best friend's wedding. And so obviously that doesn't go down terribly well. So she gets up the next morning, has a fit of, this is enough, I'm not having this, gets on the plane to New York just to get away, and ends up finding a whole new exciting life for herself out there. And then the books follow her on her adventures. Hijinks ensue.
I love that. Did you call your protagonist Angela because of Angela Chasing My So-Called Life?
I didn't, but I could have. I actually named her after a Celestar song. The Celestar were a very big band. They weren't. They were a moderately big band in the early to mid-2000s. That great time for guitar-driven indie rock, but I was listening to Stella Star. Don't feel like no one remembers you. I do.
I don't know. I just thought back to the early 2000s and thought, oh, that was a couple of years ago, and then realised it's
some time ago.
Yeah, now.
Unfortunately, some time. Yeah.
Bless them. How does okay? What were you doing before the books, and how do you? This is a popular question, and I know a lot of listeners are very intrigued by the answers. How do you go about having an idea, structuring it, and then putting it on paper?
Oh, I don't know. So before the book, I know that one. Before the book, I was actually a children's editor. So I was a children's book editor. Well, before that, I was a PR, and I did some beauty PR, which is kind of how we are where we are today. Mm-hmm. But then I left PR because I was really bad at lying about bad beauty products and pretending they were good when they're not, which is how I ended up on the other side of it. But I left PR and moved into children's publishing and was an assistant on a licensed publishing list. So we made all the books for film and TV stuff. So I would like do Shrek books, Fifi and the Flower Top, Noddy, Mary-Kate and Ashley.
Yeah. I'm trying to channel their hair today, circa 2007.
Constantly trying to channel their everything, mostly their extraordinarily expensive bags. I met them when we were doing their books. I met them. Yeah, we did an event when they were over here pimping something that they had branded, and they were telling us, because I was like, oh, you know, what are you going to do next? Do tiny, tiny miniature creations. And we couldn't control Mary-Kate because she was just dead excited because she'd seen Ross from Friends in the hotel library, which was what she said. We were like, aww. And Ashley was like this super intense business maven even then, and they were like 20. It was insane. And Ashley's there telling me and my friend, like, oh yeah, well, we're actually working on a fashion line and we want to be like Marc Jacobs and have a diffusion line and then a high-end line. And we were sitting there with our like pop going like, oh yeah, that sounds likely, of course you are. I feel silly now. I want to go back in time and like apologise and also ask if I can get involved somehow.
Yeah, with shares.
Yeah, anything, just that free bag again.
Mary-Kate and Ashley, I always think, because they go to the Met Ball every year, and I always think, because they look fabulous, I've watched their movies where I like them very, very much.
New York Minute is a great movie.
It's a great film.
New York Minute is a great film.
And they were actually very good actresses.
I thought so.
But I do think if I were to be on that table at the Met Ball, because I really think if the Met Ball ever does happen for me, it's like I'm going to have one shot.
Yes, me and you both. And my shot would be getting in through the toilet window.
Yeah, and I don't think if they were either side of me, that would be my best night at the Met Ball. They don't seem very.
They they're miniature humans. They yes. are absolutely tiny. And I met them, they
them
weren't
home
quite
shut them
yes,
home
yeah, miniatures. They weren't quite 21 because they took over their company. This is a very exciting insider thing, but because we worked with their company, we were privy to all that, but they took over their company when they were 21, everything changed. So they could have only been 20 when we met them, and they were just so tiny, absolutely teeny tiny. And Mary-Kate was just wild-eyed and very excited about having met Ross, and to tell us that they closed Topshop down so they could have a go-round. Which initially I was like, I want to come round Topshop. We don't want the same sizes. I won't be competing with you.
I would have just gone round after her and bought everything that she bought in my size.
Yeah, and it would have been amazing. Yeah. But Ashley was so on it. She was, even then, so smart. She knew exactly who everyone was, what brand they worked on, what territories you looked after, what your annual income for their brand was. I couldn't believe it. They were just... She was so sharp. And I should have known then that she meant it. She was like, I'm going to become a massive international global fashion label. I'm like, okay, cool.
They haven't gone into beauty yet, though, have they?
No, just the fragrance. Can you get the fragrance here? The Nirvana? Elizabeth and James Nirvana.
Yes, I've had a press release about it. It's got quite a snazzy bottle, hasn't it?
Yes, because they've got a couple of different variants now as well. There's the black and the white, and I think there's another couple. They're very intense, very strong
fragrances. I'm not very good at those, but I'm
it's kind of like a Narcissa Rodriguez type thing, or a strong Tom Ford.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah. So,
yes,
writing books.
Oh, God, yeah.
I've tried, but I think this is going to be how this is going to go in lots of different directions, and I'm fine with that. I have tried to write books. I've tried to write short stories, and inevitably, for me personally, it's always very autobiographical, and it tends to be like therapy.
Yeah.
Is that where you started, or were you able? Is yours more fantasy? Like, how does it work for you?
Yeah, mine was definitely a fantasy. I Heart New York was my first book, which was about Angela moving to New York, and that was entirely an anywhere but here fantasy. So I was at HarperCollins working as an assistant in the children's division, which was great. It was a really good job. I got lots of opportunities. I got to write books for, Noddy, who doesn't love that dream. But I was also in a really miserable relationship, and I was really broke, and my life was just not in a good place. And I didn't see a way out of it. And I'd just been to New York with my brother for his birthday, and which my mum basically made him take me, which was like the best thing she ever did, and I apologise. I've taken him since, and I've flown him out to LA to visit and stuff, so he's had it back, but he did me a massive solid by taking me to New York for his birthday.
Right, got you.
Big brothers don't want to take their little sister on holiday to New York for their own 30th birthday.
No.
But he did, because he's a champion. So I'd been and loved it, and just couldn't see a way of how I could ever be there, and wanted to be there so badly. So I sat down to write, and it was actually just after Christmas, and then I sort of made it my New Year's resolution that I was going to write every day until I had something finished, because I think that's one of the hardest parts, is finishing something, because it's easy to start, and then you get lost in the middle, or it goes in a direction you didn't expect, or life gets in the way, and other stuff comes up. So I was like, right, you've got to finish this. And actually, the same New Year's, I was like, I'm going to write every day, I'm going to start writing. Because I'd always loved to write, and then it just stopped because of work and life. And, we all... It's really hard to publish a book. It's really, really hard. And I was working in publishing, so I had a very realistic idea of how hard it would be. So I'd given up. And then I just thought, if you don't try, you don't get. So I started writing the book. I started writing my beauty blog, and I started writing a journal at the same time. And that's how everything sort of kicked off, which was good.
Do you think that having that creative output, I think when you find the right channel, or the right platform, I should say, whatever that might be, I've been a writer for 15 odd years now, but I feel like I've found my proper space with the podcast.
Yeah.
It just feels really right. Did you feel like you just, all the pieces slotted into place?
Yeah, gave up on the journal pretty quickly, because that was not as much fun. Real life wasn't nearly as much fun as fantasy life. And the beauty blog I kept up with, and I loved it, and I did that daily for about 3 years. And then when I moved to the States, that had to take a back seat because the books had taken off. And the books, I just loved it. As soon as... This is the thing I always say as my writing advice, is when a lot of people will say, I want to write a book, and I don't know where to start. once you know what the thing you want to write is, it will come more easily. And I think a lot of people beat themselves up and try and force a story out of themselves because they've just decided, I should write a book. But if you've got nothing to say, you can't say it.
And that's true. And I a couple of years ago, I did, it was supposed to be go once a week for like 16 weeks or something and write a book. And it ended up, they cancelled that course because they went off peak, and then it started it by correspondence. And it was essentially you have to figure out what your heroine is at the beginning, what's going to change her, and what the resolution is going to be by the end. And they sort of made it feel like it was painting by numbers.
Mm.
And I don't feel that that's...
No, that's not how it works for you. That's not how it works. And everyone has a different way to write and a different way to find their story. And the big thing in the States, whenever you do writing advice, someone will ask you, are you a plotter or a pantser? Because you're either a plotter or a pantser. So you either plot everything out step by step, or you go by the seat of your pants. And I can't do those bits because I laugh and be like, pants mean Snickers. And they don't like it because Americans don't like being corrected on such things in general. Some will find it charming. Either way,
how do you fare with bottom and fanny?
It's troublesome because you hear a lot of fanny.
Yeah.
You hear a lot of fanny. And the hardest thing is, and I don't want to get political because it will just make me open a vein, but our president, the current president of the United States, his name is the childhood word for farting.
Yes, that's true.
And that's really troublesome for me every time he's on television. A, it's funny because I'm like, President Trump. That's my nana saying, have you trumped?
That could have been a character in one of your naughty books.
Yeah, Mr.
Trump.
Is there a Mr. Trump? Where was there a Mr. Was that Camberwick Green? I feel like there has been a Mr. or a policeman Trump.
If this helps, I was listening to the RuPaul Michelle Visage podcast the other day, and they call Trump 48.
Yeah, 45.
45? Is he 45?
Yeah, he's 45, sadly.
Or maybe it's 45th.
Yeah.
Yes, anyway.
A lot of people do, because they don't want to use his name, because giving the name gives it power.
As it's a bit like
it's a Voldemort situation. Don't give him his name.
It's also like saying it out loud is the same as writing it on Twitter. Like, people could find it. It adds to their searchability.
Yeah, it's monstrous. The whole thing is monstrous. Completely forgot what we were talking about because I get so excited. But yeah, the plotter on pantser situation is... I am a pantser. Mm. I am a pantser. Not a fannier or a bottomer. A pantser. I never have a clue. I know where I'm starting and I know where I want it to end, but it changes all the time.
I also feel like and I get this, it's an obvious question to ask because a lot of people want to have some form of creative output, whether it's a book or a podcast or whatever. But I do feel like it is, even when somebody asks me that question, like, how do you do your podcast? It immediately, it wrong foots me.
Yeah, well, because also I think when you have a creative outlet is your living as well. Like, if I think about it too much, I can't do it.
Yeah.
Which is when I realised that, was when I sort of realised that, oh, this is who you are and what you do. Because it's really weird to go from having an office job and a day job that you can explain to people and people recognise to doing something quite random and creative to it. Because you then imagine everything you say about it sounds incredibly pretentious and terribly worthy and silly, and I feel like I have to apologise and justify what I do all the time. So then when you start talking about your process and the way that your work comes to you, you have to do it in that voice, because you just feel like you have to apologise for your existence. And then I try not to, because I also think that's a woman thing where we shouldn't have to apologise for what we do.
I agree with you. Jen Sincero talks about that when I had her on the podcast. She was talking about don't say sorry.
Yep.
But also, I love those, like, I love in the studio, in the actor studio with James Lipton.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of my favourite things ever.
Tell me about your process. Yeah.
But I also, there's another one, I've forgotten the name of it, off camera.
Mm-hmm.
I forget the name of the interviewer, but it's black and white one-on-one interviews.
Yeah.
And there's a series that's like five series of about 12 episodes each. And I love Jessica Chastain. I think she's
a goddess.
Fucking awesome. And then Mary Grimmer does her makeup. A few of my friends have interviewed her recently and are just like, she is a freaking rock star.
Yeah.
And she was on it and she started talking about her process. And I felt myself for the first time feeling quite uncomfortable because there is something about talking about how you are creative that's...
Yeah, it feels like something you shouldn't be allowed to celebrate.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, because you should. You absolutely should. Jessica Chastain is an incredible person who puts amazing performances on screen, stage, whatever, every time she walks out of her door. I want to hear about her process, but at the same time, I would cringe.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be that way. It's crazy. And I do think, again, yeah, it's women. I don't think, you know, Tom Hardy stands up and says, this is my process. We're like, oh, tell us more, Tom. No. Tell us how you suffered.
I do my, I learned my lines in the nude. Excellent, Tom.
Yeah, it's like, oh, very good. Whereas if a woman said, I've gone and learned my lines in the nude, you'd be like, ugh, loves herself.
Exactly.
And it's stupid. It's so stupid. It's so internalised and awful.
It is. It's bollocks.
It is bollocks. That's put a very fine point on it.
Yes, I think it covers it off nicely.
A multitude of process sins.
Yes, so I think creative process is one of those things that also, if you actually could articulate it, then we wouldn't procrastinate. And
exactly.
I certainly procrastinate.
Yeah, and if I didn't procrastinate, I wouldn't have a podcast and we wouldn't be here. So, yay, procrastination.
Procrastination is why you've got a podcast.
Yeah, pretty much. When I'm writing, I will seek out any other thing to do. Literally, my underwear drawer will be organised with an engineer's life. I've decorated entire rooms. Mm-hmm. I've come up with entire other series and projects and anything to do, anything at all other than do the thing I'm supposed to be doing.
But I find, and I don't know if this is how you work, I can have a deadline and I can be given a month to write something.
Yep.
And when I get it, all of that stuff, all of the ideas, everything that I'm going to do, it percolates.
Yep.
But I can only execute when the deadline is looming.
Exactly the same. I finished I Art Forever, obviously, a couple of months ago, because it's out now. A few months ago, I then had to sort of let my brain rest for a minute, because you get, like, really... A book will, like, mess with your brain, because you have to create an entire other universe in your head. And that is a bit weird. So that had to chill for a bit, and then I was doing the copy edits and all of the fun, boring stuff that comes after the actual writing. And then I was like, well, I've got like 4 months until my next deadline. I've now got 2 months until my next deadline. Have I actually started writing the book?
But I think there's something to be said, that whole percolation
I'm percolating,
And I also feel like your brain does a lot of work in the background that you don't have to be a part of.
Oh yeah, and you don't even know about it. And suddenly, like, I was thinking about it yesterday, the new book, and something just occurred to me while I was in the shower, and I'm like, oh god, no, that's what that is, and that makes loads more sense now.
Yeah.
And until all those little jigsaw pieces fall into place, when you sit down to write it, what you come out is just going to be guff. It's terrible.
Guff and drop.
Just guff and drop.
When I was at school, it was always very much, on a Friday afternoon, you'd be told, now, if you want to sort of, you know, be in the top group, you want to do your homework when you get home this evening.
Yeah, no, I'm going to do it Sunday night or Monday morning. They were my two choices.
During Songs of Praise, once all the good TV is finished.
Yeah, exactly. It was exactly the same, and I still am, and I find it really, really hard to move. I've tried to do it earlier, and it just doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And this is the plot of Panther thing again. Like, I've got friends that will plot books out on post-it notes and index cards, each character word for word, like, you know exactly what's happening in every chapter and then you write it.
Yeah.
But to me, that's not the fun of it, because I kind of write it how I read it, which is just to find out what's happening as I go along, and that, like, gives it its life and its excitement. And in theory, my books are really funny, so, like, to me, that's how you can't plot out humour. Yeah, so you have to just, and there'll be set pieces that I'll know I'm working up to something.
Yeah.
But also, a lot of those things that I plan end up getting cut because they're dead on the page.
Right.
Because I've overworked it in my head. So to people that want to write and feel terrible about not having, you know, this epically planned out Game of Thrones universe, don't worry about it.
Oh my god, do you watch Parks and Rec?
I've watched some Parks and Rec. I'm very familiar with its work.
It's Combs of Dunshire, if anyone knows Parks and Rec. If you've seen the episode where Ben creates the board game that is essentially a plot Game of Thrones thing, I don't even know what goes on in Game of Thrones, if I'm truthfully honest.
Man, it's just confusing. I've read the books, so I feel like I've
what?
Got... Yeah. Yeah.
Were you procrastinating?
Yes. Yes, I was. my roommate in New York was obsessed with it, so when the TV shows came out, she wouldn't let me watch it until I'd read the books, which is ridiculous and silly, and I'm not a child, but I'm also afraid of her.
Right.
So
we
did
you
watch
pick
it.
Up that one?
Yeah, we did watch it, but I did read them. And there's just a lot. There's a lot in there, man.
A lot.
Yeah, like a lot. And now when I'm watching it, I'm just like, yeah, you did a good job of condensing this madness and nonsense.
If you had to visually describe your creative process,
yes,
is it Jessica Fletcher in the introduction to Murder, She Wrote?
It's magical.
Is it Barbara Cartland?
Yes.
or is it Stephen King?
It's probably more, it's Babs, because I do like to like have a chocolate as I'm going. A wee snack.
Do you recline, everyone? Do you ever use one of those programs where you dictate into it?
Oh, man, no, I wish I could. I've actually tried that. It doesn't work. It's silly. It just looks silly on the page. I can't. I have to just stay up until like 3 o'clock in the morning and bang out whatever is there. Because I work better at night, and I can only do it when I've got like completely paying attention to what I'm doing.
It's that bloody Dior ring.
My ring is attacking my jumper. It hates it, and I don't know why.
The Dior ring that is a present to yourself.
It was a present to myself, which again felt really silly, but I was like, no, I want this.
No, it's never silly.
Yeah,
to
it's not,
celebrate
it's not.
Oneself.
Yeah, it? I just published a book, and like I wanted a thing. It's really silly. So it's a Dior Wee ring, and I'm sure some people will know what that is. But it's a silly little filigree ring that says Wee. It's the French for yes, not a wee wee. And it came out like years ago as like a promise ring. They marked it as like propose with this and then let her pick her own engagement ring, which I thought was marketing genius because you've sold another ring.
Exactly.
And I always wanted it and I loved it so much. And my boyfriend at the time, who was I'd been with for years and years, was all like, oh, I'll get you that when I propose. And it was that 50-50 thing of being like, I hope he does and I hope he doesn't. And I just sat and waited on it for years and then saw it the other day and walked past Dior and so when are you walking past Dior or never? And then I was like, what are you waiting for? Like, don't wait for somebody else to go and get that for you. You just publish your 13th book and go and bloody get it. So I did.
Yeah.
And the man in the shop didn't need that whole story, but he got it. I also spilled water everywhere because he gave me a bottle of water and I knocked it over. And
well, that was you subconsciously saying, excuse me, Squire, I expected you to champagne.
Exactly.
This is what I think of your water.
Evian nonsense. And a baby bottle at that. Yeah,
oh, I do buy like a baby bottle.
I do. It felt special. Made me feel like King Kong.
It's why I like air travel. I like the mini cans.
Yeah.
And tonic.
The teeny tiny Gordons and the teeny tiny tonic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although I need about four of them. I'm like, excuse me, Squire.
Yeah. So that was a very nice gesture. But where's the rest of it? Yeah.
You did something that I thought about doing a few years ago.
Yes.
And I thought about moving to Los Angeles because it just seemed like people on the hills were happier than I was. In London, and so I thought, yeah, I know that I could juice.
Yeah,
I would like to go hiking in the canyon.
Yeah,
the leisure wear seems to be better.
It's pretty intense. Yeah.
And you seem to constantly be fighting off men. So I was like, yeah, I'm moving to LA. What's the reality, Lindsay?
The reality is absolutely juice. I lived when I first moved to LA, which I moved there 2.5 years ago. I moved to what I refer to as the Golden Juice Triangle, because I lived in Los Feliz and there was a juice shop. Like, I was in the middle of a triangle of really good juice shops. So I did refer to it as the Golden Juice Triangle. The best one being just this little, like, mom-and-pop juice store on Hillhurst in Los Feliz, which is, like, the best, and they do this juice. It's actually a smoothie, a delicious smoothie, and it's, like, cacao and date and almond milk, and then loads of good stuff as well, secretly snuck in, and it is delicious. Its name is not a lie.
Of hiding peas in mashed potatoes.
Yeah, but I'm sure it's like a million calories because it's full of cacao and almond milk and bananas and stuff, but it's so delicious, and you convince yourself it's good because it's from a juice shop. How could it be bad?
It will not be bad.
Loads of juice.
Yeah, why did you make the move? Because where were you?
I was in New York, so
before?
I was in London for work for HarperCollins, and after several years of after I'd been to New York and was inspired to write I Heart New York. A lot of people think it's autobiographical, and it's not. I wrote the book and sold it and everything before I moved to New York. The book came out about 3 weeks before I moved. I worked with the licensing team, as I said, and I basically bothered the US team, who we worked in tandem with because we would get the licenses for the movies as a global company, and I was always the one that would bother the US team. So I would stay late so that I could do the phone calls with LA, and I would come in early so that I could get everything off to New York before they started. And that it was considered a bit try-hard and a bit too keen by the people in the London office.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. It turns out there's nothing wrong with being a keeno. Because that's what got me over to New York, because when the job was created in the New York office for someone to do branding and licensing in-house, they thought of me. Yeah, they're like, we need someone who's got the global reach of it, we want someone that's got a creative element to them, which I'd signed my book deal so they knew I could write and create, and they wanted someone with the licensing background, so that's how I got there. So never let anyone tell you not to be a keeno, because that's how I got to move to New York. So I did that 8 years ago. I moved over to New York, was there for 6 years, lived out every Sex and the City fantasy possible.
Right, break that down.
Yeah, all of them. It was like best girlfriends humans could ever meet. Cause
did you meet Terry White?
I met Terry White in New York. That's
former podcast guest.
Yeah, my wife. The wife.
Terry is so cool.
Who we were introduced to by Sarah Manning, who is the literary editor at Red, who is the bestest. Yeah, she introduced us on Twitter and said, I think I'm going to need to buy a hat. And she was right. So we met in New York when she moved over there for work. And this is the thing that New York does, which London does as well. When I lived in London, it never got a fair crack because I lived with my boyfriend, who I didn't like very much, and we lived in the suburbs, and London was not my friend.
So were you really close to kind of...
of London.
Were you kind of close to sort of living the 20-something dream, like boyfriend, house?
You call it a dream. It was not a dream. It was a nightmare. We had a mortgage and a cat and a Passat car that I couldn't drive, and we didn't like each other. The cat went to live in the countryside with my mum and dad, and she lived a long and happy life. I wanted to take her to New York with me, but she had a heart murmur and she couldn't come. So we had a very tearful goodbye where she just did not give a shit, and immediately was like, this is the best, and I live in the country now, and I'm going to learn to eat things and bring them into the house. So she did me proud. I met my boyfriend when I was 20, and we were together until I was like 27, and we shouldn't have been. And we were on good terms, like things weren't bad when we ended it was just like, oh, we've wasted so much time. And then I got the offer to go to New York, and like, peace out, this has been great. This has been a fun
drop.
7 years. Yeah, mic drop.
Kel couch.
Yeah, he's very happy. He's married with a baby. It was the right thing for both of us. But don't do that, guys. If you know it's not right.
The reason why I call it a dream is I think that whatever you land in or on or around when you're in your 20s, if you move away from home, lots of my friends who I went to uni with still live in the villages where they grew up, and their lives have just continued and they've had the various landmarks, and that's brilliant for them. But for me, I was from a small village and I came to London seeking the bright lights, and I landed in my 20s on magazines, and that was my oxygen.
It was exactly the same. I'm from a small mining village in South Yorkshire near Doncaster, and people don't leave. And the fact that I wanted to leave was not looked upon kindly. And, people that have stayed there and have awesome lives and they're really happy and that's the best. And I'd love to reconnect with people on Facebook, actually, and seeing how their lives have turned out. And they're all really happy with everything they have. But it wasn't for me. And I knew that. And I knew I wanted to get out and see more and do more than that offered me. I read too much as a kid. And I was like, I'm pretty sure there's more stuff out there, guys. And at the time, I was like, maybe I'll end up coming back here. Yeah. And I was like, I don't think I will now. But it was really hard at the time because it made my teenage years quite difficult.
That's really challenging. I felt the same. The whole way through my teenage years, I just didn't feel like I was in the right place.
Yeah, same. And I was not given an easy time for expressing that. Mm. It's not looked upon kindly sometimes for teenagers to want more, I think, which is tough. But if you want it, go and get it. Like, don't let anyone tell you you shouldn't have something.
I remember being told, doing one of these aptitude tests. Yep. I think I must have been about 16. My parents had to pay for this thing that the school were like, she should probably do it. And I had always said to the careers counsellor, I want to be a performer.
Yeah.
I'd love to be an actress. I mean,
we're so
the
same. I was Nancy and Oliver at my school, and I was obsessed with the fact that I was going to go to performing arts college, and they were like, you're not, you're from a pit village in Donny, you're not going anywhere. I was like, you're going to do English, you're going to come back, you're going to be a teacher, and you're going to shut up. And that's what I was told for all teenage years.
Even though, this Moresby test, I think it's called the Moresby test.
Yeah.
So you had you in the middle, and then these lines would go off to what you should be doing, and the thicker the line, the more whatever. The thickest line went to social worker.
Sorry, I'm like, but you are kind of doing that for me now. I don't think it's wrong.
I was like, the line to performer is not the thinnest line on here.
Yeah, it's on there.
But I genuinely didn't feel comfortable in my own skin. I was like, I wanted to see the world.
Yeah, me too.
And it's challenging to break away from that.
It's really challenging. And there wasn't, my parents, I'm sure, won't care now. But they were not especially supportive. And they weren't saying, like, go out there and get it. They were just like, just be quiet and don't make a fuss. And my school was pretty good, actually. My teachers were pretty great at just being like, just hang on in there. When you get to uni, this will all feel better. Because I didn't have a fun time at school, and my wanting to learn was not looked upon kindly by the other kids. And it was rough, and until I got to London, well, uni was amazing because I met really good people in uni, and then I got to London, but I'd moved in with my boyfriend because I didn't know what else to do. I was afraid. Mm. I was too scared to do it on my own, and we stayed together for way longer than we should have, and that was not good, but it ended up being the best thing because that's kind of what pushed me to write the book and to move to New York, because I then knew that I could do it.
Yeah.
And I knew it was a... you do it now or you're never going to ever do this.
It does sometimes sound like a cliche, but it is true. Like, if something has happened and it's not ideal or you wish you'd left it earlier, you will always look and say, but if I had left it earlier, I wouldn't be here now.
Yeah, I wouldn't have ever gone to... I wouldn't have written I Heart New York, and I wouldn't have moved to New York. And that was what defined and changed my life to where it is today. But New York was just... it's an incredible experience, but you have to get it by the throat and go for it. Mm. And I met so many amazing women, mostly the wife, because everyone that's there and that succeeds there and stays there, you're fighting to be there. So they were some of like the bravest, smartest, boldest women who are just there to kick ass every day and get what they want and fight for it. Mm. And you end up being such a support group for each other because it is hard. And we didn't have our families with us, and most of us were single or dating terrible people. Side note, another story for another day. So you end up like creating this family and this incredibly strong bond. And it's some of the best friends that I know the friends I'll have the rest of my life. And it's people that we just check in still daily.
Yeah.
And it was just the most amazing thing. And we would get together, and there was like, you know, I was a writer, and my friend was Terry's a magazine editor, and then we had a friend that worked in advertising, and another friend that was a PR. And I was like, it is a bit too close to it sometimes, isn't it? Can we get a lawyer? And we did get a lawyer, and she's like a Venezuelan jewelry designer / gorgeous human as well, because everything has to be like TV. And she's incredible, and it's just like everyone was amazing and just so great.
But I think as well, if you have had that experience of feeling like you're in the wrong compost for a long time, when you do actually make a decision as big as saying, oh, I'm going to move to a different country, or I want to pursue this career, whatever it might be, when you start off, I don't want to put words into your mouth, but this is how it felt for me. It felt like I was on a bike as like a little kid riding without my stabilizers for the first time. And like, I wanted to look around and just check that I was doing it, because I didn't... you know that feeling of not necessarily believing that you are, so you need someone else to tell you that you're flying.
It was crazy. It was really weird because I've never been like a big risk taker until I moved to New York, and I couldn't quite... I didn't know anyone. I didn't have any money. I had the promise of a job contract for a year. So I went, you know, I think a lot of people are like, oh, but you went and you were a famous author and you probably knew those people. Didn't know, I knew one person from the office who was like... I was going knowing I had a work friend. And I didn't have any money because I was in student debt and credit card debt and everything else debt. So I went sort of breaking even in the end because I'd paid off my debts when I left. But I went without a promise of anything. But it was like, you do it now or you don't do it. And it was enough. I'd scared myself enough by spending so much time in the relationship that had not been good. And when I would look back on it, that you spent a lot of time in that relationship unhappy, and you've lost time on that, so are you going to lose this?
Yeah.
And I had scared myself to the point where I'm like, no, you're going to do it.
And that's the thing that gets you out the door. I'll go to this party. Yeah.
Exactly, and that was it, the first sort of six... And I'm so bad. We've talked about it briefly, but I do suffer from anxiety, and I struggle with social situations, because before I'm out the door, I've already convinced myself that everyone thinks I'm fat and stupid and awful, and they're talking about me every time I turn around, and I can talk myself out of something in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
And the first 6 months of having to say yes to everything in New York was horrible, but also super exhilarating, because when I got there and had a drink, it was fine, and I met all these amazing people. And New York is actually... a lot of people had said to me like, oh, you're going to hate it because it's so... everyone's so cold and hard and it's the worst place. I've never lived anywhere so welcoming.
I've never had that. I've always felt like actually the eye contact in New York freaks me out as a Londoner who makes no eye contact.
Because they look at you all the time.
Yeah, and people will be nice.
Yeah, and I would meet people and they would say like, oh, add me on Facebook now and we'll get brunch this weekend. And I'm like, yeah, sure we will. And then I would get home and there'd be a message saying, well, should we meet at Cafe Colette at 11? I'm like, I was so shocked.
I remember going over to the States. Now, I was in New England in 1999.
Nice.
God, I'm old. I remember, I was in New England with a girl who was from New England, had been in LA, and she was like, oh, LA is so much nicer than here. People are so rude and on the East Coast.
Yeah.
And I was like, Bitch, no, you crazy.
Yeah. So what are you drinking? I'm gonna have some. No, it's not at all. And like having moved to LA now, LA's great and people are very friendly, but they're also massively flaky and super full of it. So whereas in New York, if someone says let's do something, you're doing it. You're doing it immediately. It's happening. If someone says let's do something in LA, maybe you're doing it. Maybe you're doing it in 6 months. Maybe you're not doing it at all. Maybe they'll be an hour late to meet you.
Maybe you'll do it. Maybe someone else. Maybe Jessica Biel will do it.
Maybe you'll do nothing. Maybe you'll stay at home and sue.
I'm wildly obsessed with Jessica Biel. Did you see how she made an entrance on the Ellen Show this week?
I didn't.
You know Twitch, the DJ.
Yes.
She danced down the stairs to Time of Your Life.
Nice.
And then did the lift.
Oh,
which is very
that's
cool.
Nice. We went to a restaurant recently. She's got a restaurant in LA.
She has.
Everyone's got a restaurant in LA. Yes, we went. My friend's got a little boy, and we couldn't palm him off on anyone, so he came with us. And she's got like a really fancy, like, play pub, basically. You know when you go to the pub here and they've got the playroom that's scrubby and unpleasant, yeah, but you just throw your kid in and don't worry about it. She's got a really fancy one of those in Beverly Hills, or West Hollywood, that sort of area, called R-Fudge.
R-Fudge.
Yeah. I'm not desperately saying I recommend it, but, you know.
Okay, if Jessica Biel's going to
If you've got a kid, it's the tits, okay. But if you haven't, I've got other recommendations for you.
I went to the Chateau.
Yes, nice.
I've been to the LA once. I was there for 48 hours.
That made you want to live there?
No.
Oh.
It was to interview the Backstreet Boys.
You're living everyone's dream.
No, because I was like proper nerd. I went, is this where they film Baywatch? Because we filmed at a location house on the coast. But it was up a bit. It was like up a cliff.
Yes.
But you could see the sea. Mm-hmm. Where, and I was like, is that where they filmed Baywatch? Because I was really worldly wise.
Could be. Who knows?
And sophisticated. And I was chatting to them. And then we were in this garage. We were shooting in one house. And then by the pool.
Yeah.
But it was part of a complex where there was another house. We were in this garage, and I was chatting facing the garage doors, and then someone said, we must open these so there's more light. And they opened the garage doors, and you would have loved my face, because I wear a heart-shaped necklace that says Arnie for Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yes. So you can imagine my face where the garage doors open, and I'm like, that's Miles Dyson's house from Terminator 2. And I realised that I was on the set of Terminator 2. And I just...
That's actually amazing. I'm going to need that address when we finish this.
Yeah.
Because I've got a car.
And I no longer thought about Brian Howie.
Yeah, you're not worried whether Backstreet's back or not at all.
Backstreet was over, as far as I was concerned.
That's amazing.
What prompted the move to LA, just to
It was a couple of things. It was primarily our boy. No. So I met my boyfriend in LA. He's a friend of a friend, and I was there for various reasons, but one of the reasons to see my ex-boyfriend. There was no overlap. There was a clear 6 months, just so we're all clear. But yeah, I had been dating a guy in LA and had reconnected actually with a London friend who was living there, so I had gone over to see her and do that really fun thing that we girls do, which is like have dinner with your ex because you hate yourself and it seems like a good idea. So I was seeing him and seeing her, and I met my boyfriend at my friend's house at her Super Bowl party because it was the most American of days.
You are so American.
I'm like, so LA. Hashtag so LA.
Is this 2 years ago?
3 years ago.
Would that have been the Bruno Mars halftime show?
Yes, because the Red Hot Chili Peppers were on it as well, weren't they? And that, I do remember saying I'd like to go back in time and show this to Anthony Kiedis and have a little chat with him and say, this is where it's going, Anthony. Stop it.
Yes. Have you read his book, Scar Tissue?
No, I've got it and I haven't read it.
It's
I must.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
If you are ever looking for something to procrastinate with and you're out of Real Housewives franchise.
Yeah, I'm Real Housewives.
I've just this weekend, whilst working, I have it on in the background, just to clarify.
With Vanderpump Rules background, I feel like it's been gone forever.
I can't really do that, but I've just done Real Housewives of Auckland in one weekend. Because Nadine Baggett put me onto it. And
yet you won't watch Vanderpump Rules.
No, I do watch Vanderpump Rules, but it's like, on my tier system of reality TV, it's like Real Housewives, Orange County, Beverly Hills, New York, tier one.
Yeah, fair enough.
Kardashians, tier two. So Vanderpump Rules and Jax and Brittany come in like
I don't. I won't. I won't engage with Jax Taylor. I won't engage with Jax. I don't agree with his work. I don't know. He's starting to look like Quagmire from Family Guy. I just won't. I won't engage with Jax. I don't enjoy his character. No. I know it's a character, but I think it's also not.
No,
but I deeply love Vanderpump Rules. I'm obsessed with Stassi's Instagram live. And I saw her once in the street, and I didn't know what to do because I was trying to reverse park, and I can't reverse park, and I was obviously outside her house because she just stood, she was sitting with her little dog outside. It was like doing its business, and she was. I must have been parking next to her car or something because she just sort of watched me, and it was horrible because I never recognise celebrities when I see them. I'm so bad at like acknowledging them, and in LA you do see people, and it's weird. But I was like, oh, it's Stassi. I didn't know what to do, and it took me so long to park that car. And then I got out, was okay, and just walked away, and immediately texted everyone I'd ever met and be like, just parked in front of Stassi's apartment.
I don't know what I do.
It was too much. I had to go and get a drink. I was meeting my friend for brunch, and it was fully like, bring the jug of mimosas, and I'll Uber home, because I can't go back to the car, so it's fine.
I'll go back tomorrow under cover of darkness, when Stassi will be out.
I love it. I'm very excited for the new bar that apparently is happening, the Tom Tom. The two Toms.
Oh, okay. So, do you live near all of that?
I don't. Sorry, I'm just jumping around like a basket full of kittens. this is how my brain works. It is literally kittens trying to stay in a basket. And they're like, no, I want to go over there.
Because you understand, I'm not fixated on where you live necessarily, although we have had a conversation about driving to someone's house.
Yeah, it's rough.
Yeah. But it's just because I obviously clearly don't understand the geography of LA.
Well, because LA is a nightmare, and the first few times I went, I hated it. I really hated LA. And then when I actually met people there and got to know the city, I learned to love it for what it is. Mm-hmm. I live in Silver Lake, which is sort of East LA, so east of the nonsense, which is what I call the middle. I try and avoid going into West Hollywood, Beverly Hills, all that area, because that's where the bad things are and the bad things happen and the bad people. And
do you mean celebrities?
No, I mean some celebrities that are dead local. It's just that nightlife, red velvet rope, bandage dress, 8-inch heels.
Does that still
Coke
happen?
For dinner. Yeah,
Coke for dinner.
It really is. Yeah, it's like, what did you have for dinner? Like, oh, a cigarette and a Diet Coke. And like, delicious.
Nutritious.
Yeah, and that's not for me. And it's just, I don't ever want to go to a place. I'm too old to be going to a place where I might not get in. I just won't do it. I will not do it.
I've never had the face for those places anyway, even in my 20s.
No, me either. They look at you and they can smell Doncaster. And while that is a beautiful and fragrant scent, it's not getting you in to the front of the line in Hollywood. Because I don't know if you've ever seen Entourage. But you're not coming in. My name's not down and I'm not going in.
I have watched Entourage, and after I watched it I realised how heinous and awful it was. But how
and that
I
life is
Gold.
Real. That does exist. That stuff is real and I just can't do it. And I've got friends that do. I've got a few friends that are showbiz journos and they have to. And the stories they tell, it's just... I couldn't do it. I couldn't have done it in my 20s and I definitely will not do it now.
Side note... Did you watch the Entourage movie?
I tried really hard. It took me about 3 goes to get all the way through. And I loved Entourage. I loved the show.
It's very entertaining.
Yes.
But Mark Kermode, who...
His review was actually magical.
And dubbed Entourage. Because it basically...
Well, it was just so confusing because I did watch the show and... I know there's an element of hate watching that kind of lifestyle, which probably isn't healthy, but it was an entertaining show about an unreal thing.
Yeah.
But then I think what happened between that show ending and then the movie coming out was the whole reality explosion, where that lifestyle, when you watch the show Entourage, back when it was on, it was like a joke. It was almost a parody and a satire of that world.
Yeah.
But the movie was a celebration of it. And I think that was such a mistake. But then people began, you know, with the Kardashians too, like people aspire to that lifestyle now. They want that super glossy, high-octane celebrity lifestyle, whereas I think the original show was far more satirising that lifestyle.
I wonder if reality, like proper reality, actually has any place anymore, or whether it's just all glossy
reality.
Everything
is just fictionalised. Yeah, it's terrifying. And that side of LA is what I... can't do and scares me. I'll go to beauty launches in LA with the work wife, Harriet Hadfield, Esquire.
We're coming onto the podcast.
Yeah, so me and Harry will go to stuff and we're just so noticeably the British girls. Because we're just sat in the corner with like our regular face eating all the snacks.
Our regular face?
Well, because in LA, like, and I think everywhere, it's true everywhere. I've just done like a tour of England and Scotland, and it's true everywhere. There are people now that make themselves up for their selfies.
Yes.
And there are people that make themselves up for themselves. Mm-hmm. And both are valid and both are good choices. But I am not good at doing my makeup on screen. Like, I'm not a makeup artist. I just like to do my makeup for me and hope for the best when I put a camera on my face. But there are girls who just look absolutely incredible on the camera, but in real life it can be quite intimidating. And we're not those good. We're just like eating the mini burgers, going like, bring them on.
No, I'm the same. But as much as I do like doing my makeup, though, if I ever do a selfie on Instagram, because I don't like to use filters, because I don't know how.
See, I love a filter. I've taught myself. Could have just taught myself better makeup, but instead I taught myself filters.
I like a filter that gives me cat ears.
That's my favourite one.
But in terms of what I mean, actually, I shouldn't have said filter. I should have said airbrushing.
Yes, I won't. Like, I try not to, because I think I don't want to give people a false impression of what they're getting when they meet me.
So if you see a selfie with me, it's with no makeup, and it's me saying, "Look, my skin's not looking rubbish at the moment because of X, Y, or Z." But if I do a makeup selfie, it will be because I have spent quite a bit of time doing that makeup. And then I always do on Insta stories, I do the outtakes.
Oh, nice.
Because I couldn't meet you after sort of being friends with you on social media now for a while and not... Can you imagine if I
walked
in... Are
you disappointed that I don't have cat ears? Because I do spend a lot of time with the cat ears on Insta stories.
I'm a little bit disappointed.
Yeah, I can't upset people on this tour.
I'm just happy with the fringe. You're having a good fringe day today.
I'm having a really good fringe day. I've reached peak fringe. I trimmed it myself at the weekend and we're back at peak fringe.
Yeah, it's very... Yeah. And your colour, I keep like looking...
Thanks.
Do you have a layer of pink?
So we bleach. I have an amazing colorist. My colorist Naomi in LA is Naomi Knights. In case anyone's in LA, check her out. She's the best in Highland Park.
I'll have to get the
she's
link.
The
best.
I will. Yeah, she's amazing. It's just like this super cool little neighborhood salon in Highland Park, and she is the tits. She's so incredible. So Naomi colours it. She and her assistant Trey, who I deeply love, and I have to keep like messaging after leave, going, "I love you." It's fine. He lost his dog and he found it again, and it was like the happiest day of my life.
That's a fairy tale.
I'm so worried about him. So they bleach it out. I'm naturally blonde. I'm like dark blonde, but they have to white it basically to get the pinkness light. So you have to bleach it platinum and then tone it very, very, very blonde. And then they use Davina's pigments to get the pink. Yeah, and they do a very like really pretty peachy rose gold that lasts for like one wash, because pink washes out so easily. And then they mix me a colour conditioner. So what this is now is just the colour conditioner, really, because all of the original colour is gone.
Busy Phillips went rose gold recently, so I'm obsessed with her Instagram.
Oh, she's the best. She's amazing. Yeah, she is someone that I probably would like look at her Insta stories and try and work out where she is and be
just
her friend.
Hang out.
I think we'd get on. I don't want to go and do those like trumpet workout classes, though. That looks exhausting.
I wrote about those trumpet workout classes because I just wrote about it.
Okay.
And then
it looks amazing.
Bored. I've spoken to the woman who does it. It does look amazing. Yeah. But I think that she could eat all the pies and still have a great figure.
Yeah, there's
that. She's like lean as anything. But then I bought a trumpet from Argos because I got carried away with myself.
Is it Get In Shape Girl trumpet from the 80s?
Is it what?
A Get In Shape Girl. Like,
yes,
that's what I would want.
But I actually do use the trumpet quite a lot.
Nice.
So I just have it behind a door, propped up most of the time. But then I will take it out in the morning, and if I don't have time to go for a run or like do any exercise, I'll jump on it for 10 minutes. And the reason why, it's a vanity thing, makes all the fluid in your face go.
That's amazing. Look, I'd have to get a very supportive sports bra and give it a go.
Do you?
I'd enjoyed it. My cousin had one. I grew up next door to my cousin and we were only 6 weeks apart in age. Mm-hmm. But she had one and I wasn't allowed one. So I think there is some secret trumpet resentment. So I probably need to like work that out by getting a trumpet.
Like £37.99.
So that means I can probably get one from Amazon in the States for 50p.
Exactly.
I should get one.
And it's not that big. So you talked about your work wife, Harriet.
Yes.
Let's talk about Full Coverage.
Yes,
I am now the proud
owner
of a Full Coverage mug.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Love a mug. There's
merch.
Enough tote bags in this world, so we went mug.
How long have you... What prompted Full Coverage? Because if you haven't listened to it, listeners, please go and check it out on iTunes. It's Lindsay and Harriet talking beauty.
Yes. And nonsense.
And nonsense. And just being pretty brilliant.
Oh, thank you.
And the thing is, it's just putting good stuff out into the world.
Yeah.
So
happy stuff.
What was your entry gateway into podcasting?
So I met Harry a couple of years ago now, which is crazy. And I just moved to LA, and a mutual friend introduced us and said, I think you guys are going to really get on, which I've had great success with with my friends. I was like, okay, trust you, we'll meet her. And within about 3 minutes of meeting, I was like, this is where I buried all the bodies, and this is where we can find them together. And I think she was a bit scared, but I was like, I love you so much, be my best friend. And she was applying for her visas to move to the States with her husband, so they moved over in January this year. And we'd hung out a bunch of times, and we were messaging and stuff before then, so it was really exciting when she moved. And we started going to events together, beauty launches and stuff, and we were sat talking. We were actually waxing lyrical about the Tom Ford new dip quad. I remember so specifically, we were like, somebody was like, oh, what's on your eyes? I was like, oh, it's new dip. And Harry was like, oh my God, I love new dip. And this girl was like, you two, like, it's quite nice to listen to you, but like, all you talk about is makeup, you should probably do a podcast. And we should do a podcast. Yeah, and Harry was obsessed with podcasts, but she just moved to the States and she was listening to them in her car because she was driving so much, because you have to in LA.
Yeah, there's a lot of driving.
Yeah, and I listened to a lot of podcasts. I was listening to a lot of wrestling podcasts, which is a different topic. I was like, yeah, there's not that many beauty podcasts. And I think there was only you. It was the person that we were listening to when we first started looking into it. We couldn't find any others apart from it was you and then Fat Mascara. Yeah. I think that was it. So, well, you know, give it a go. What would we do differently? Because we don't want to do the same thing as you guys, because what you guys do, you do so well. So, well, what if we just do what we do all the time, which is just sit and talk to each other about makeup and just chat about what's good out there. And try
what's
not
good,
to talk.
Lindsay?
Yeah,
what's good?
What's good, Miley? Miley hasn't been on.
She should be so lucky.
She'd be great, but yeah.
She would be great.
But pencil yourself in, Miley. Yeah, we just really wanted to have a positive, fun chat, and we try not to focus on negatives and try and just sort of have a good time and make it a fun chat for people to listen to and just something interesting. Somebody messaged us and said, oh, I love it, I feel like I'm listening to my girlfriend's while I'm getting ready to go out. I was like, yes, that's what we wanted, and we love that, and it's been really, really, really fun. I love making podcasts. I didn't think I would, but it's actually so much fun just to sit and talk to your mate, as you can tell.
It's right, the bestest.
Yeah,
it's the best. And the weird side effect that's come out of it for me is I've interviewed people for the podcast that I've known for years, brand owners that I've chatted to and have sort of known on a semi-formal basis, and now we're buddies. Like, it breaks down the barrier.
Yeah, it really does. And there's something about talking to someone, I think, for a podcast different to when you interview someone for a magazine, which I've done bits and pieces of journalism, and then you feel bits and pieces of journalism makes it sound like they're professional. Just to clarify, I'm not a professional journalist like yourself. I'm a writer of nonsense. But when I do it, like, I feel like I'm trying to be really professional and have all my shit together and have my questions and make sure, you know, whoever I'm writing for doesn't get a bad rap. Whereas this is just talking about stuff with my friends. And same thing when we interview people, you just end up having this really cool, fun, natural conversation.
It was a revelation to me because I'm, as a journalist, I've been used to the, you go in with 15 questions.
Yeah. And you've got 7 minutes.
And more and more. Exactly. And more and more recently, they have to be approved questions.
Yes.
So there is no flow. You can't start off here and end up reverse parking in front of Starzy.
No, you can't, You can't do it.
And it happened recently. I had an hour with a supermodel and she was amazing. Thank goodness. But I actually felt really stiff and awkward.
Yeah, because you just...
She'd say something. She'd talk about, you know, in an ideal world, I'd be a mermaid. And I go, okay, but what's your favourite red lipstick?
And then when really you want to be like, headline, in an ideal world, we'll be a mermaid.
I know, why? Like, who would be Aquaman? Would it be the guy from Entourage, or would it be Jason Momoa? This is important.
It would be Jason Momoa,
obviously.
Yeah, I've done a couple recently, like, little interviews with sort of semi-celebrities and stuff, and it's always just so awkward because A, I'm awkward anyway, and I was like, I loved your Vampire Diaries, and then he doesn't want to talk to you, and he's
I saw that picture. Yeah, is that Steve McQueen?
It was
Summerholder.
Yes, it was Ian Summerholder, who was amazing and just the nicest guy, but he is like a basket of kittens and I am like a basket of kittens, so he's just going off on one about this horse that his missus bought him for his birthday and how that horse gave the place he bought the horse from enough money to rescue 7 other horses. I'm like, is it a rescue horse? He's like, no. I'm like, then I'm so confused, Ian. And the PR has just stood in the corner going, like, can you two please get back on point? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if we can. Because we're talking about his horse, and I can't even work out what it's called, because 1 minute he said it was called Joe, the next minute he said it was Paint. And my photographer is like, going, is it Paint or Joe? And I'm like, I should be asking that, but I can't, because this is hard. So I'm not good at it. I'm not good at interviewing in like a very structured situation, which is probably why that's not my job. But the podcast isn't that. The podcast is always just so much more fun and fluid, and the interviews that we've done have been amazing. We met, I know you approached Dr. Murad, and we talked to him after you. And we were quite anxious about that, because it was like our first big person we didn't know. And it was the best time. He knows everything about everything. And it was like sitting down with your mate's super clever, warm, encouraging dad, who was here to tell you can do anything.
I felt exactly the same when I listened to that podcast that you did, and I could feel you guys having exactly the same reaction to me, which was, why have I not spent more time with Dr. Murad in my life?
No, I know where he works now. I just sometimes feel like going around knocking on the door and being like, excuse me. Dr. Murad, I've got some questions about life. Can you show me an ink blot and tell me what it says?
Afterwards, like, I stopped recording, and he was very interested in the podcast and what I was doing professionally, and you know, which is so rare in this world. Actually, said, you know, how do you make money, and is there anything that we can do to support?
Yeah, no, I know.
Amazing. And I was sort of blurted out, this, and I was, it's hard, and I want to do this, and he said, well, I started my business when I was 50.
No, he's incredible.
And he just drops that nugget, and then you're in, and then
he made us stay and eat a snack afterwards, because they'd got like pastries and fruit and stuff, and we'd finished, and we were like, we've taken up so much of your time, we're gonna go, and he was like, you're gonna get something to eat. And we had to stay and like eat some fruit and the snack and the pastries, which were delicious. And like, I could have talked to him all day. I would have just sat there and talked to him all day. And in the end, like, his team were like, you need to trot on. And we'd love to stay. They weren't that cool, but they were just like, oh, is it that time? And we're like, we have been here for hours, and we've not been recording for some time. We're just asking questions about the Dodgers.
It's when you know they want you to leave, but you just are enjoying it too
much. Didn't want to go, and he didn't want us to leave, I felt like. Maybe I'm projecting, but I think we would have talked to him all day. He was awesome, and that's the most amazing thing about the podcast. Plus, I get to hang out with one of my best mates for a couple of hours every week, which we do anyway, and talk about our favourite thing, and then share our favourite thing with loads of people.
I had Sarah Creel on the podcast, and she basically makes all the beauty products that our makeup bags will have formulas that she's created.
It's amazing.
And we talked about how bonding it is, how it's so disarming, the conversation about beauty products, and how I was in Superdrug the other day, and there were two teenagers covered in metallic highlight.
Amazing.
They looked like Little Mix on acid. But God loved them, they were having fun, but they couldn't decide on a fake tan. So I ended up butting in and just having a chat with them, and it was bonding.
No, it's a massively bonding experience. It's been amazing. And being on this book tour, the number of people that have come to the book tour events and then asked about full coverage. And I think it is a great levelling playing field. And because it is it's a space that's majority owned by women, we feel safe there for the most part.
Yeah.
And we don't feel judged. And if you're listening to our podcast, you know we're not going to judge you for loving makeup, because we've just spent an hour of our life talking about makeup. And I just think it's such a good, freeing, genuine place. That it makes me really happy to be part of it, and everyone's been really supportive. It's been awesome.
I do think that's what's been incredible, and it wasn't that I didn't expect it, but I just hadn't put anything out there like this before.
Yeah.
When you get an email from a listener, or you get a DM or a tweet,
it blows me away a lot. We had an email from a nurse who was like, "Oh, I've done my like night shift at the NHS, and I put it on in my car to drive home, so I'm not on my own." On the drive home, like I couldn't have ever wanted more than that, and I never anticipated even that. And even as an author, who like I've had amazing emails from people saying that like, your book helped me through this difficult time, or this was the thing that made me smile during this difficult time, and they're the most amazing ones, because you forget that you're doing it for anyone other than yourself when you're creating something. But the podcast, we were like let's try it out and see what happens, and then it just has happened, and amazing things happened, and it makes me so happy. It's like the proof of doing something good is there.
I feel very happy about it. Like, it makes me really happy.
Awesome.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It makes me very happy to know every week I'm like, I've got all my list of to-dos, and when it gets to the podcast thing, it's like my eyes sparkle. I'm like, I'm excited. What can I produce this week?
So cool.
We are actually drawing towards the end of our time together. And we haven't covered wrestling.
Oh, man.
We haven't covered... Oh, my God. We haven't even talked about life coaching.
Which I just feel terrible. That makes me a terrible life coach. Like, we're just not talking about it. That's my coaching.
We just had some... We exchanged a few tweets, probably a couple of months back now, about... I think I asked Twitter for permission to do something, and then you validated, like, biscuit eating or something.
My nickname with my friends is The Enabler.
Enabler.
In New York.
It's a good wrestling name.
It is a good wrestling name. I don't know what my gimmick would be. I just think they go around enabling people to do stuff. But yeah, we all had hilarious nicknames when I first moved, because we had a collective, which was the Broho Synthesis. Me and my friends.
The Broho Synthesis.
I will cut it really short, but basically I met a gentleman who I had a very passionate and exciting fling with, and we were going to go on this whirlwind whisk away weekend together, because he was visiting and he was going to Vegas with some friends, and he was like, you and your friends should come. And we were like, oh my God, we're going to, this is going to be crazy. And it was literally like the next day, and I had to go in and say to my boss, excuse me, but I have tomorrow off to go to Vegas. And my boss was an incredible woman. He was like, never ask permission to go to Vegas, just tell me everything on Monday. And I was like, you're the best. So,
oh my God,
she was amazing, she was the best, and I will never not love that woman. But I was on the phone to my friend, we were working out the flights, I'm like, oh my God, we're going to do this, we're going to go to Vegas tomorrow, we're going to do this. It was crazy, and I was like, I'm not that person, but we're going to do this. And then I got an email saying that from the gentleman saying that his friend had put the brakes on it because it was supposed to be a bro weekend, and he had invoked the bros before hoes code, and my gentleman caller had to say, I was hoping for more of a bro ho synthesis, but I have to like give in to the boys on this one, so it's a bros weekend. So I was like, let's just skip over the part where you called us hoes, and actually we'll be the Broho Synthesis. So we were like, that's going to be our band, and then we realised none of us have got any musical talent, so that was just our friendship group was the Broho Synthesis. Or the BHS, which for the English of us was actually really delightful. The Americans were like, oh my God, we're the BHS, and I was like, no.
I feel like, yes, I love Broho Synthesis so much.
Yeah, it was the best, and we still have all of our Broho Synthesis nicknames. And I was the enabler. I was just E most of the time. Taking us back to Entourage. Because I probably would have been E as well, realistically.
E?
Yeah.
So he was in The Notebook with Ryan Gosling and Rachel McAdams. And I often wonder, because he did a sitcom with James Vanderbeek.
No.
Because Comedy Central in the UK went through a phase of running all the pilot shows that had a season that didn't get
I'm glad they found a home. And didn't get picked up.
And there was also Bad Teacher with Ari Grainer, is it?
Yeah.
And I love her, I think she's brilliant. Yeah. But so I'd get into all these series and then be like, oh, when's the Series 2 coming? They're on Wikipedia. Cancelled 18 months ago. But I used to think, he was in The Notebook with...
I mean, good for him. I hope he's still working. I think he is. He'll be doing something. But we find he's made so much money from Entourage. It's still on syndication, it's on all the time.
And he might have Ryan Gosling's phone number.
Probably has.
That's going to get you through the night.
Yeah, I mean, if you're having a rough day, quick text out to Rybags. What are you up to?
Hi, Rygo.
Yeah.
Maybe he's a good life coach.
I bet he is.
I reckon he would be, you know.
Because we'd all be enablers together.
Yeah.
It'd be great.
Maybe we should invite him on the podcast. Ryan, why don't you come on the podcast and give us some life advice?
I think he'd be really, like... stoic, but in a good way, just like really like brief advice, but everything, every word counts.
He's so dry. I love him in interviews.
He's great.
Also, and this is going to loop us back nicely to Terry White, who's been on this podcast before, and he found the perfect red lipstick whilst living in New York.
Yes.
Ryan Gosling, the actual Ryan Gosling.
Yes.
From Canada, lived with Justin Timberlake, Mickey Mouse Club, all of that. Actual Ryan Gosling changed his background screen and possibly his profile on Twitter to Terry's Empire cover.
Yeah,
and I don't call it Empire Magazine, I do call it Terry's Empire Magazine.
Terry's Empire. I mean, everything is Terry's Empire. We're living in Terry's Empire.
We are.
That's why she's so great.
Thanks for having us, Terry.
That was amazing. Aww.
I'm so sad I have to draw it to an end, but I
don't want to.
But you should come back.
I'm just trying to stop me. You've got to get rid of me first.
We should come back. We should. I should come to LA.
You probably should.
We should probably
because we need to get that juice.
We need to get that juice, and we should probably record in Miles Dyson's house from Terminator 2.
Yeah, and we should hike in a canyon, and then we should go to Little Dom's in Los Feliz, which is across the street from the juice shop, which is where Ryan Gosling is often photographed having his breakfast.
I'm booking my flight.
I've never seen him there. I've never seen him.
Well, then you're not living properly.
Well, I lived down the road from it, and every time I have seen famous people there because it's just like a little neighbourhood Italian, but it's like the cool place where the celebs go.
Sure.
And I did see a couple of famous people there, but I'm just so bad at spotting them. But I would get texts from people and be like, "Oh my god!" When I went past Little Dom's, like Ryan Gosling's outside. I'm like, "Why am I in this now? Why am I getting this now? I'm walking distance. What's wrong with you?" Or it'd be like, "Oh, John Hamm was there last night." And I'm like, "Why is this happening?" He's got a booth there with his name in it because he goes there so often.
John Hamm. Like,
yes. I'm like, why am I not getting this information while you're there?
Listeners, we are currently in Soho recording, and we're in a basement. We're actually at the Bobby Brown Pro Store, which we probably should mention.
Yes, it's great.
Because it's very awesome. But Caroline Hirons actually social mediaed the other day in Soho, just seen Idris Elba. So I think after this conversation, we should have a Caroline experience where we should and exit the store.
Just go find a celebrity.
And just see somebody super duper famous and we'll tweet about it.
Preferably Idris Elba or John Hamm or Ryan Gosling. Actually, I'm not fussy.
No.
I'll take anything.
Chris Hemsworth, I'd be keen to see.
I love a celeb. I do love a celeb spot. I still get really excited.
It is
the Doncaster in me where I'm like, oh my god, a famous person. Which is so, it's the first famous person I ever saw was in Doncaster, and it was Timmy Mallet. So,
whack-a-day.
Yeah.
Word association game.
Really sweet. Yeah. Muscle pause, muscle
and it was always, the prize was always, oh, Mel and Kim.
Oh.
The Mel and Kim vinyl.
No, well, they're never going to be respectable.
No.
Is that what's wrong with us? We grew up listening to a lot of Mel and Kim. They were very ahead of their time.
They were. I think we grew up with Timmy Mallet and a lot of Project Yew Tree on our screen. It's probably quite a dark note.
Well, but on the upside, look where we are today. Look what it's made us.
We're fabulous.
We're never going to be respectable. That's what I know.
That's the tagline for this show. Listeners, I hope you've enjoyed that. I'm going to put the links to full coverage available on iTunes and I'm guessing all good
and
streaming
SoundCloud,
services.
Yes, everywhere.
I will be putting the links in the show notes. I will also be putting links to Lindsay's books in the show notes because I think it's very important that we all support Lindsay and buy each and every single one of them.
Please.
I will be buying all 13 and then driving to her house and making her sign all of them with a lipstick.
Nice.
I think that sounds great. So on that note, we ain't never going to be respectable. Thank you for listening. There you have it. That was Lindsay Kelk on The Emma Gunn Show. I will be putting all of the links to Lindsay's social media and the links to her books on emmaguns.com in the show notes. If you're having a good time, if you enjoyed the show and you want to spread the word, there's only one place to do it. Why not head over to iTunes, leave me a 5-star rating and a written review, and explain why you're enjoying the show. It's the kind of thing that helps a show like mine get noticed on a massive platform like iTunes, and I would be most grateful. It was a very great show coming up next week that I can't wait for you to hear. So I hope that you will join me then. But in the meantime, stay well and thank you for listening to The Emma Gunn Show.